Hey guys, so welcome back to the podcast. I'm really looking forward to speaking to today's guest, Justin Wiseman, from all the way down from Australia. Justin, welcome to the podcast.
Thanks, man. Great to be here.
Justin, for the guests or for people who are listening in, give me a wee bit of insight as in who you are, what you're involved in, and what you love to do right now.
Yeah, cool. So I'm assuming that probably most of your audience has no idea who I am. So basically, I'm from Australia. I'm a business owner. I run a business with a previous guest that's been on, so Tanya Cross. So we've got a business called Maximum Growth. I'm also involved in another business. So I've got like a hospitality food van business as well, so which I run with the family. So at the moment we're growing that. So, you know, that's a conversation that we can have if we choose to. But, you know, currently running three vans in the process of getting to four in that. So about myself personally, so love business, love human behavior, love mindset, love family. So they're sort of the key things that I really, really love to jam on and go down on, as well as obviously coaching as well. So broad picture overview of who I am right now. Far away, man, on any questions that you have around that. So
yeah, fantastic. So obviously I got to meet you, Justin, through Tanya Cross's group as well too, Maximum Growth. And we've got the similar mentor as well, Dr. John DeMartini.
Yes.
But I suppose let's take it right back then. So what was it like as a young Justin growing up in Australia? What part did you grow up in? And what were those early inspirations like? What was it that you were involved in? What did you really like to do? And what was it like as a young Justin?
Yeah, great question, man. So I grew up in Melbourne. So for those of you who don't know, Melbourne's like southern part on the east coast of Australia. So grew up in like, I would say like a middle class family. So there wasn't any like real, if we look at it in a financial sense, it wasn't really like in my perception, much like financial stress that we had. My dad was a brickie, ran his own business. And so, you know, like I remember like getting up every morning and watching him leave for work. So he'd be up at like 5 a.m. and we used to run to the front window and wave to dad out the window, and he'd drive off with all this, you know, bricklaying stuff on the back of his ute. And so that was always like that's an early memory that I have of like, I guess where I kind of picked up my drive for work from was like always watching my dad, you know, leave at 5 o'clock in the morning, and then he'd be back at like 6:30 at night. So, you know, he'd have a full day bricklaying, come home, spend time with the family, and then, you know, do it all over again. So grew up in Melbourne. Had a lot of fun down there, got into skating as a young guy, so which obviously led down to, you know, causing a little bit of mischief as you do. We used to get out and about at around 11 and do a fair bit of skateboarding, you know, at the local schools and stuff like that. Didn't mind getting into a bit of a tuffle with a few of the other skater kids as well. There was like little skater gangs and stuff at the time. It was nothing too crazy, you know, not talking like when my dad was growing up, when he would talk about how they had, you know, big gangs down there in Melbourne, and you know, they used to go through some pretty crazy shit back then. But so nothing too crazy on that side of stuff. And then my dad hurt his back bricklaying, so I had to give up the business. And we end up moving to a little town called Coralie, which is basically outback New South Wales. So massive culture shock to me personally, to go from like city boy to full extreme the other side, to like we're in the middle of this country town. There's like, I think there's like 80 people that live in the town centre itself, open expanses. And so going from a skater kid with everywhere to skate to like dirt roads, I was like, what the hell is going on in my life? But the reality was a pretty cool change too. So, and this is where, like, this point here in my life is probably the point where I really started to get into like human performance.
What age were you then, Justin? Around what age was that?
Yeah, so that would have been about 12.
Okay.
Around 12. Yeah. So, and I wouldn't say that I knew that it was human performance then, but I always loved my sport. So growing up, sport was always important to me. But at about 12, like, I think it was probably because I hit puberty, like testosterone kicked in, started to get like a little bit like aggressive, wanting to win, you know, wanting to perform, like also got interested in girls. And my thinking back then was like, you know, girls just want the top dog. So then just got really interested in like performing in sports. Football, AFL, so Australian rules football for the listeners, not soccer. Well, we call it soccer. Is that what you guys call it, or is it what do you
No.
guys call it over there?
So AFL is kind of like a mixture between what we would see as a mixture. I don't know if it's a mixture between rugby and Gaelic football. We call football back here football, but then there is, if you play GAA, then they'll call it soccer because they call it football, like you would call AFL football. That sounds very, very confusing for anybody else listening in, doesn't it? So if I'm playing football, like the English Premier League, etc., watching Arsenal, Man United, that's called football. But if you play Gaelic football, that's called soccer.
I'm totally confused. I just think it's all soccer, but that's because in Australia it's just called soccer, no matter, like the level it's at. So yeah, got really interested in sport. Man, you're opening up my head because all of this stuff now. And so just so everyone knows, excuse, I basically just got out of bed, got ready, jumped on the podcast. So if my brain takes a little bit to get linear, just excuse me
Not enough
for a second.
caffeine.
So yeah, got really interested in that. And so there was all those reasons, but I remember like when I would run, I started to like pick up that how I managed my breath, managed how I could perform. And so I remember picking that up at about 13, just going for a run. I was like, oh, I remember like breathing to the beat of my feet. And then I was like changing the way that I was breathing and just playing with it, and realized that I could perform better based on how I managed my breath, depending on how I was like moving my body. And so like that was like the first key insight, I guess, when it came to human performance side of things. And then got like right into wanting to play AFL. And so played, like that was basically my life. Like obviously went to school and things, but my obsession was football, and obviously a little bit on the girls as well. But my obsession was football. Played a little bit of tennis too. But I just wanted to basically get into the top, basically the AFL. That dream obviously didn't happen. Ended up with a neck injury, so hurt my got tackled, got basically poleaxed for no lack of a better term, and just like done like the whole side of my neck. And so, really interestingly, after that, I could play for a bit, but I get it'd be like four or five matches, and I get hit, and then my whole neck would just like I'd just spasm, and I couldn't move like my whole neck. So stopped playing footy then. So that was when I was 17. So that's a long time ago now. So that's half a lifetime ago for me. So that was sort of like my younger year focuses. And there's a bit more. I don't want to jump into my 20s because that's where it kind of gets a bit hectic. But I'd also like to touch on like, I guess where the so that was like the performance side of stuff for me, like where I started to get interested in that and like more in the body though. So I still wasn't so much interested in like the mindset side of things yet. Like I didn't have anybody around me who was talking about that stuff, or like I hadn't picked up any of that side of things yet, but a lot about the physical body and movement and things like that. But I guess the real driver for me was back when I was in primary school. So this is a little bit funny. Is I was in prep and we were playing Kiss Chasey. So the girls got together on to play Kiss Chasey, and I ended up being in. So got kissed, ended up being in. And anyway, I had this crush on this girl named Claire. And anyway, so I chased her and I gave her a kiss. Anyway, she was it. And about 2 minutes later, a teacher comes over and like told me off, like ripped shreds off me, for giving Claire a kiss. Now I look at this now, and I don't know whether she told on me or whether the teacher saw what happened or whatever. But in my mind at the time, when I was getting told off, I was like, well, I was like thinking to myself, like, why would someone want to play the game? And then, and look, this is my language now. It's probably a little bit different, but it was like, why would someone want to play the game, but then go and dob on me? Like, why do people do what they do? And that was the question. And then, yeah. Why do people do what they do? And so that was a question that I asked then. And then from there, I became interested in people and watching people.
It wouldn't have been, it obviously, you wouldn't have been able to connect that dot at that time. But looking back, it's something you've reflected on that must have caused that void for yourself. Is that right? Yeah.
Yeah, correct. So, yeah, I had no idea at the time. I didn't even, like, if I look back, I didn't even realize that I was starting to watch people and think about people and wonder why people behaved the way they behaved. Or I wasn't thinking about that stuff, but I definitely recall, like, looking back and through reflection, whoa, shit, that was a point in my life where, you know, like, at six, or I was six, you know, at six where I started to go, like, because it was such, like, a big shock that that would happen, that then I started to look at people, like, why are they doing that? What's going on here? Like, what's really going on? And so I started people watching. And I think from more of an observation, like, if I look back, it was more of, like, an observation point of view. I probably wasn't, like, thinking heaps of questions at the time, but I just became really interested in people. And learning what people were doing, and if they did this, they did this, or why they did this, or I've noticed that this person, if this happened, they'd do this, and it kept repeating. So I was like, I started to notice those things, and then I started to, and that became really clear also, and probably where I picked it up the most was where I spent most of my time was within my family. So, like, really started to notice, well, if mum responds, you know, if this happens with mum or whatever, then there's going to be this response. Or if dad does this, then there's going to be this response. Or, you know, I can get away with more of this with dad and then be able to say these things to get away with that with dad, whereas mum's going to respond this way. So there was also that element of, well, as well, of, like, playing with it and because of the patterns that I could notice. And so, that I noticed. And so that was sort of the start of my journey into...
What age would you have, like, been then, Justin, when you were starting to kind of become that wee bit more aware of, like, where you could kind of push your parents on what side? Were you, like, fully conscious of that when you were 6, 7, or were you kind of more in the teenage years?
So yeah, that was sort of, I would say probably, like, when I sort of feel like I became conscious of that was probably more around 11, 10 or 11, but probably closer to 11 when I feel like when I was a bit younger, I wouldn't say that I was, like, fully conscious, you know, like, I'm sure everyone in here can fully relate. Some people find it super hard to even recall moments before 10 years old, right? It's like it's a black slate. And, you know, you try to get them to go there and they're like, I've got nothing. Like, I just don't have anything. I know the people. I know the places. I've got, like, maybe some big memories. Like, I remember having Christmases with my family, or I remember, like, spending time with my grandparents, or, like, even if there's, like, some big traumas, obviously they remember that stuff. But a lot of it's a blank slate.
Yeah.
So even for me, like, I remember, like, you know, sort of core big moments. So, like, the one I just shared there, and then, you know, there's another moment as well, which was basically being told I was fat, you know, by an old child carer. So I remember that moment. And so at the time, like, and even now, like, I don't consciously recall, but when I get to about 11, when I really started to, like, when I started to push boundaries and got into skateboarding and wanted to get sort of out and do my own thing, I specifically remember then, like, really being conscious of, okay, I can use these things that I picked up to get my way.
Get what I want.
Yeah. And look, it didn't always work, you know, but that's sort of where that started.
I see that all the time with my daughter, she'll be 15 now in June, and she knows what buttons to push with me, and she knows what buttons to push with her mum. And she knows what she'll get from me, and she knows what she'll get from her mom. And then I see her playing the two of us, like, perfectly. And I sit down and I have a chat with Emma, who's my wife, and I say, can you not see what she's doing? Can you not see what she's actually playing? And she plays it perfectly. And I think we all did as teenagers, to be fair. At that time then, Justin, when you were kind of coming out of school, and, like, what were you studying at that time? What was really inspiring you in school? Was there something that you really wanted to, like, do? Had you got a path created for yourself, or was it just kind of going to go with the flow after sport?
Yeah, so it was always sport. And then with, you know, like, once that sort of the next stuff happened, school never really interested me. Like, I love school socially. So socially, school I loved. And there was classes at this. There's a couple of classes that I still remember super clearly, which you know, knowing what I know now, were clear indicators of the direction of where my life was going. So one of them was physical ed, but in regards to like the body and the science of the body, which if we look back at how, you know, I was talking about how the first thing I really picked up was how my breath could manipulate my performance. So a lot of the body stuff I recall very clearly still to this day. The creative stuff. So, excuse me. So like story writing, so writing stories, so telling stories, et cetera, was always something that I loved. And that was from a young age too. That was actually probably before even any of the stuff that I've spoken about today. Like stories has always been a part for a long time there. I'd hid away from stories, but, you know, we can dive down that track a bit later. But business makes sense. So business class I would go to, but like... And I always loved like mechanical, like figuring out how things worked as well. So, I didn't know if I was going to be a mechanic. I didn't know if I was going to be a business person. I didn't really know. Like I was just kind of on a pathway to kind of see where things led me. And I feel like at that time too, like, cause I didn't finish school. I finished in, did year 11 and then left. I feel like at that time too, I was very influenced too by like my friendship groups too. So what are they doing? Sort of what are they into? And my friendship groups at the time was, even to this day, like is still quite small. So I have a close-knit group of friends and everyone was really into cars. So I just went, okay, cool. Well, everyone's into cars. I'm going to try and become a mechanic. So I went down that path. But before that even, I was working in a pizza parlor. So there's the food element as well, which I feel like the pizza parlor stuff really allowed me to fulfill like my creative element. Mm-hmm. So I was doing that while I was at school too. And so it allowed me to fulfill that part of me that was creative and also get to flog the shit out of, you know, like as a teenager, I get to flog pizza cars that aren't your cars, you know? So,
Did your family have a business then at that time, Justin, or kind of what had happened there? Because it's a family business you still have, yeah?
Yes. Yeah, so this is a totally different business we're in now. So
yeah.
That's right. So I did mention that my dad done his back. So when he done his back, we ended up buying a business, just a general store. There's not many of them around anymore. Not in Australia anyway. I'm not sure what it's like over there for you, but just basically a general store, which we did everything, you know, like you could come and hire videos to watch with your family, you know, cause we're outback too. So outback New South Wales. So you could come and hire videos. There was an alcohol shop. Like it was basically the whole shebang. And so mum and dad ended up selling that, I think when I'd left home or whatever, maybe when I was 22. So I think we had it for about 10 years. So that business at the time, we still had when I left school, but I never really got involved in it. I just used to do some hours for mum and dad at the shop when we had it, but I never really got involved in it. But just mentioning that, I guess if I'm like going to string something together, I'd say that probably like understanding the numbers in the business and how important knowing the numbers are probably comes from like that influence from having that shop, like seeing mum and dad doing the numbers, counting the money, doing all that stuff like every day after the shop would close, and then them having those conversations around, you know, where's the business at, what's happening, all that sort of stuff, I think really influenced like my capacity to like understand the importance of knowing your numbers in business. And then also, you know, talking about the money.
Yeah.
You know, like talking about money.
What did you pick up from your parents specifically? Like, what was the biggest lesson that you learned around business from them both that you took then into your own business?
Beautiful question. I think I would say for my dad, like he had a lot of drive. So I feel like with my dad, the biggest lesson that I probably took away, and I can't really say it was like this just specifically relates to business. I think it relates to anything that you're really committed to doing with your life is like there's a drive element, but there's also the element of like just keep going, because if you just keep going, eventually you'll get to the point, no matter the challenges. Like I recall my dad, no matter what the challenges were, what was going on, like he just continued. And sometimes that was to his detriment. So I've learned a little bit from that as well. It's like, okay, cool. Like I can't just fry myself all the time in order to achieve an outcome, because it's going to be detrimental to my health. It's going to affect my family. It's going to have a flow-on effect to my relationship. It also means I'm probably going to shut down as well, because I know myself. And so if I get to that point, I just close off.
I think that's not to interrupt you, but I think that's such a crucial point, Justin, because there's so many business owners, especially if it's a family-run business, where they've obviously got a lot of pressure and worry and fear whether they're going to be able to provide, etc. But outside of that, there's a lot of business owners that don't know that it's time to actually stop here. No, there is a time that you can also kind of, it's not that you're giving up, but maybe it is. It's like, now's the time to actually change direction and do something completely different. Now's the time to change course. No, you can't just keep flogging a dead horse just because it's something that's known all the time. As you said, it can be detrimental to your health. But I think there's so many business owners that do feel that way, where they think that I have to just keep moving. It's going to change. Something's going to be around the corner. Something's going to like come and enlighten us and give us something completely different again. But I think having the courage to be able to recognize it, nah, now it's time to change. Now it's time to like move in a different direction. Would you agree?
Totally. I think there's two elements to that. And you tell me if you agree with this as well, but I think there's like the element of I'm flogging a dead horse, or it's not that I'm flogging a dead horse, but I'm flogging myself. And so if I go, well, if I'm flogging the dead horse, it means whatever I'm doing in the business that I just keep repeating over and over, expecting to different outcome. Like, dude, something's got to change there. Whether that means the business itself and your business idea or your market or something isn't accepting of your offer. It's like something has to change. You can't just go back and keep doing the same thing. But then you look at that, that also then leads into, okay, well, I personally burn out if my business is this thing because I'm not winning. But then I also think there's the other side, which is I can be winning in business, but I'm so freaking hungry, probably isn't the right word, but I'm going to say hungry. But it's also driven by fear. So it's like there's this drive that's like fear-based, anxiety-driven, that if I stop working, then everything in my business is going to fall apart and I can't take time off, because if that happens, then I'm afraid of what that means. So it's like it's driven by the fear of potentially losing where they've got to, or the fear of, like, I don't know, staff not being able to handle what's happening. And so there's also that side of well, is where you're actually winning, but it's almost like you're so fearful, but also addicted to like making it bigger and, you know, just growing. And a friend of mine calls it bro scaling.
It's nearly like you can't actually get to enjoy it, because it might be functioning perfectly while you're not even there. But what's going on internally in your head doesn't even allow you to actually sit back and process that and maybe even enjoy that part of it. It's like, what might go wrong? Or I have to have my finger on the pulse all the time. And I know that I can definitely resonate with all of that, for sure.
Yeah, yeah. I had a client a few years ago. She ran her and her partner ran a injectables clinic. And they both grew up, they're from India. And so they didn't really come from the wealthiest, they weren't wealthy at all. Anyway, so he became a pharmacist and she was a doctor. So sort of followed the parental, you know, like go this path because then you can become wealthy. And so they ended up in Australia together. And the big thing for them was that they ended up starting an injectable clinic. And I remember working with her specifically this one time, and we were having a conversation around like pretty much this thing, but it was based on like her societal, where she come from in society. She knew that she needed to let go of like holding on to all the stuff in the business, but she was so fearful of going back to like being like having nothing, that was actually her glass ceiling. Like she felt like she could control the outcome, but she didn't want to let go of anything and control the outcome, but that was her glass ceiling that kept burning her out. And it was the fear of going back to having, like starting again, that was like actually a glass ceiling, which was actually going to destroy the business and take her to the thing that she didn't want to face. So it's like, but then their relationship got rocky, you know, like that caused a heap of chaos too, because the burnout that was going on there. And so, and when I say burnout, like obviously that can take multiple different forms, but I think as business owners, we understand, we get the general term of burnout. So I think like if we talk about like those two places, like they can take many different forms. And I think being a business, if you're a business owner, you really need to be super aware of your thinking, your feeling, because that's the stuff that's either going to make you or break you. It's not what's going on in your business. It's how you're thinking about your business that is the thing that's going to destroy it or make it.
Yeah, and that's crucial, just what you said. Like, and it really ties back again to, I suppose, that you can never outperform how you think and feel about yourself. Your business is always a representation of what's going on internally. And like that girl that you work with, if she has all of those things that's going on internally, like, for her to actually let her business flourish and grow to the potential that it possibly could have, unless she resolved that, it was never ever going to happen, because she was the bottleneck, I suppose, really.
Yeah, correct, man. I think, I don't know, I believe, and maybe this is wrong, but I think that you're probably on the same page here with me, because you've just basically said it, but I think that it doesn't matter the strategy, it doesn't matter the tactic, it doesn't matter how much knowledge you have in growing a business, whether that's around sales, marketing, you know, delivery, whatever it is, you know, even your craft, you know. So it really doesn't matter how much you know about that. If you're not thinking effectively, then all of that gets destroyed by your thinking. But then there's the other side of that as well. It's like you're thinking 10x's all of that. So I often say to people, it's like, I still, like, don't get me wrong, I don't want to pretend that, oh, we need to throw all the strategy and tactics out, because I know that that's rubbish too, right? So I'm not like all one way, oh, you just need the greatest mindset and you'll be, no, like you can have the greatest mindset and know nothing and you'll probably, you know, like nothing will happen, right? So it's like you're better off, like someone with a brilliant mindset who has the capacity to think will go further than someone who has the tactics and the skills, but has the mindset of doesn't have the mindset that allows them to implement that. Right. So you can learn everything, but if your mindset's off, the person who's got the right mindset, who's just learning and fumbling as they go, they're going to crush you.
Yeah.
They'll crush you.
Because you can know all the things that you need to do, but if you don't take action on them because you're riddled with fear or self-doubt, or you can't see yourself as a business owner or see yourself even be successful, or you're afraid to put yourself out there on social media, then all of the strategies and tactics mean nothing if you don't implement them. So it definitely comes right back to the internal work and doing a bit of the deeper work and understanding like a lot of stuff that we talk about and teach and coach, and really resolving a lot of that stuff first and foremost. And I think even a lot of times for me, from people that I've coached, it's once they do kind of resolve a lot of those wee things, it's like the simple things that really work. A lot of times people overwhelm themselves and think that they have to do all these different things. But if they can put a simple strategy in place and just stick to that simple strategy, no, they will start to get that momentum. And then with momentum, you start to get more confidence, and then you're starting to put yourself out there more and starting to grow your business from doing that. But that, I suppose, happens at so many different levels, because at a different level, then a lot of the times you're going back to the same problems that you had at the very start, and then you're having to break through that ceiling and then break through the next ceiling. And it's an ongoing process, I suppose.
Yeah, I totally agree. It's interesting, man. I call it the upside down funnel. So it's like you often think there's one problem, but it's like you break through that problem and that problem just opens you up to the next layer. And so it's not like, because most people like start, like might get into business to solve one issue, right? Like, so it's like, oh, well, I got into business because I wanted to help people lose weight. Okay, so you get into business to solve one issue, but as soon as you get into business, that thing just funnels out. And now you've got all these business layers of problems. Then you're dealing with delivery level problems. Then you're dealing with people problems, because you just want to help people lose weight, but everyone comes in with this different level of thinking and you're like, oh my God, like I got to try and solve all this stuff to help people get to the problem. It's like, it's never just, it's like, it seems simple, but there's just layers. And so it's like you said, it's like you have the, like you break through and then it's like, cool, everything's peachy for a while, but then you're like, oh my God, it's only because I wasn't aware of all this other stuff. And then it's like, oh, here we go again.
Yeah. You've literally just, you've changed your set of problems for a more advanced set of problems at a different level. Every time that happens, every time. And I suppose, like, delving into business then as well too, for that then, Justin, I think a lot of the times, again, that'll come back to the owner, that they have to learn to, like, delegate out. They have to learn to, like, give stuff off to other people who want to do it more or who actually like doing it. But there's a lot of insecurity that comes from people, like, even allowing themselves to do that, allowing themselves to actually delegate stuff out. There's a trust issue there, or there's, like, what are you experiencing from all the business guys that you coach, Justin, and coaches that you coach? What do you feel is, like, a common theme between guys that are, like, hitting that glass ceiling and can't get through it?
I think there's multiple, but if we look at a point, so if we say, let's say that they're at a point where they're wanting to scale. So, you know, I call it the spot fire point. So T and I call it spot fire, which is where it's like, you know, you want to grow, but it feels like your whole day is just full of, oh, this is urgent. Oh, this is urgent. Oh, this is urgent. I have to deal with this, this, and this. And then all of a sudden it gets to the end of the day and any of the things that were going to grow your business that were like at a higher level, you haven't even got around to. And so it's almost like you're running around with a fire hose all the time. And so it's like, I almost call it, and when I say scale, I don't mean like massive scale. It's like, okay, am I going to grow my team? Am I going to grow the finances, whatever? So it's like, I think there's this point where people's minds are so occupied and in a state of like reaction to the challenges and problems in their business that then they can't grow. And so I think, because everybody wants to sort of grow at some people want to scale up with automation. I think some people want to scale with people. Some people want to figure out how to simplify as well so that they can do it with a smaller team. Right. So I think the first challenge that people have is that they don't have clarity on what the scale looks like. Right. So, and I guess this is like, coming around down to a real deep fundamental level, it's like, okay, well, who am I and how do I want to express this through my business? Because I'm watching my mate Steve over here, who's growing a huge sales team, for example, and marketing team. But I'm like looking at that and I'm going, I want to grow my business, but that doesn't feel, I don't know if that's how I want to do it. And then I'm looking over here and I'm like, I got no idea about tech. And then I'm looking over here and I'm like, I don't know. And so it's like you get trapped by not really knowing who you are and then how to integrate the different things into the business that then aligns with how you see your life going. And so I think that's the first thing. It's like, okay, well, one, I need to know what that looks like. Do you want a bro scale business and have 100 team? I keep saying bro scale. That's got really into my head now. So do you want a big team or do you want a small team? Do you want it to be automated? Do you want it not to be automated? Do you want to just be you and a VA? You know, depending on your business model, right? Like depending on your business, obviously there's multiple different businesses. So, and some businesses require people, you know? So if you've got a people facing business, it's in a brick and mortar. Well, guess what? Like the reality is that, and I don't know if this is happening over there, but the reality is that most people don't want to walk up to a machine and have to put their order in. That people go to the shop to talk to an individual. That's my personal opinion. We're just finding over here that a lot of I wouldn't say like mom and pop owned style businesses, but a lot of the big corporates are now going to like it's all automated checkout. And honestly, I think that it's creating a big void and a space for people who keep doing face to face to actually take market share. Anyway, I diverge. So I think understanding those things is key first. And so that would be like the number one problem. So it comes back to like, who the hell am I? What's the vision for the business that I want to build? Because like, if you think about when you first went into business, maybe you had a big vision, maybe you didn't, but were you thinking about how specifically I want this business to be an expression of me? Or are you thinking, damn, man, I want to make some cash?
Yeah, I'll take the very first. So I was at that time self-employed for a number of years as a coach. And I remember like vividly sitting in the kitchen around Christmas. My brother said to me, he said, why would you not open your own premises and like have your own name above the door? And I was like, yeah, but I'm renting somebody else's premises and I'm getting good money and I haven't got any overheads and blah, blah, blah. But I planted the seed. And literally, like within 4 months, I had a premises and I had it opened. And then a year later, I had another one. And then I had like a few, and then it was like growing and growing and growing. But that was just because of something that he said. And I kind of ran with it and it grew and grew and grew from there. So to be totally honest, at that time, I didn't even have the motivation, let's say, to go and create a business. But then when I created a business and I seen it, I seen, now I can really start to make this grow and make this flourish. And I can actually really create a brand from this. Like, so, and that's how it started to snowball from there, I suppose.
Yeah. And so, flipping the script here. So for you, like when you first came to like that point of like going to your second premises, like were you always certain that that was going to be the path, or was there other options in your brain? Like, did you not know which way to go first?
No, that was the path. I was actually, I'm in the premises that I'm on here now. We moved in here, I think 12, 13 years ago. So I had one place and we outgrew that within a year. And I seen this place and I was actually going to Australia and I thought the Australia trip had already been booked, seen this place in October. And I was like, we have to go for it. So I knew that I was putting all my eggs in one basket for this place to work, basically. And I had invested everything that I had into this unit. And thankfully it worked out, but I didn't have any other options. That was my only option.
Yeah. Okay, cool. So I feel like not everyone's like that, you know, like that's the experience that I've had with working with people. When they get to that stage, it's like most people aren't even clear, like aren't clear on that. So it's like you had clarity.
Yeah.
So it's like you went for it. A lot of people don't. So it's like they get stuck in the spot fire stage and don't know how to grow out of it. And so I think that the clarity is the number one key. So it's the clarity. And then I definitely think number two is that there's another layer to that. It's like, well, you're probably not going to find clarity until you resolve the emotional stuff that's driving you to put out all the spot fires. Right. So it's like, you know, if you're being driven by stress and pressure, well, if that's your driver, then whatever creates stress and pressure for you is always going to drive you. And so you're going to have to consistently create that in your business. Now, you can either choose to create that through dealing with spot fires all the time, or you can choose to create that through stretching yourself and expanding. But obviously you got to have clarity to do that first, right? Because you got to know which way you want to do that in. And so you can use the stress and pressure in that way as well, but you use it productively for growth rather than unproductively to just keep dealing with the same stuff over and over. So like there's also the emotional side of it that also has to potentially be worked through. If even when you have clarity, you're still not acting on scaling it out. It's like, okay, well, there's a reason why I keep, even though I've got the clarity, it's like there's a reason why I keep coming back to just dealing with the spot fires, you know? And so it's like, well, what's that? What is that, a fear? Is it like that you love the stress of that? Is it that these things that you're actually dealing with are part of your value system and you actually need to hire other people to help you to scale and do the things that are going to get you to grow, like a salesperson or, you know, whatever it is? And so it's like, then you can get clear on, okay, cool, I know where I'm going. These are actually the things that I love, and that's why I keep getting drawn to them rather than a stress thing or a pressure thing that keeps driving me towards it. Then I need to find someone who could fill the gaps to help me get to this next level.
And I think what you just touched on there is so, so important when it comes to business, and it's understanding values, understanding your values, because most people are probably looking at other people and seeing what they're doing and then injecting their values and trying to create their business around that. And then they usually see how that plays out. But I think so many people just aren't clear. You know, and I know that they are clear on what they want, but they're afraid to let themselves actually like step under that. They're afraid to allow themselves to actually go after the thing that they want because they think it should be something else. In your coaching and even in your business as well too, how important has been the value application and understanding what you're creating and helping others create what they're creating?
Oh, Honestly, if there's, and so I think when I said identity before, so if I come back, I go, okay, identity, I see identity as like part of your values, your voids, and I also see it as like chipping away or clearing all those things that are causing the shoulds and the confusion about who you really are and the doubts. And then I believe that like that's when you understand who you are or your identity. But it's really interesting that you ask this question because I personally, from working with people, have found that once they're clear on that, like it's like the whole world opens up, the whole business opens up, right? Because it's like everything. I like to think of it this way. So I'm not sure. Have you done it? Have you spoken about values and stuff on your podcast before?
Yeah,
Have you gone down that path? Yeah.
it's a different perspective from you as well.
Yeah. Cool. Sure. So I just. Yeah. Cool. So. Our values are basically our intrinsic driver, which are driven by our voids. So the things that we've grown up and we perceived as missing. So earlier in the podcast, I spoke about that moment where I got in trouble from the teacher, created a void for my desire to learn about people. And so we all have those. Doesn't matter your experiences in life, whether that's been you've had super challenge, whether your perception is it was super challenging or super supportive. Or any of those things, we've all got voids, which means we've all got values, right? And when I say values, I'm not talking about social norms and social ideals and emotions like love and, honesty and integrity and those sorts of things, because they're not a value. They're not a value. They may be of value to people, but they're not a value in themselves. All of those things, so say for integrity, for example, which is a big one that gets spoken about a lot in the men's coaching space, and I know that you're doing a little bit of work around that at the moment. Integrity in itself, integrity is just how true you are to your value system, right? And then not committing to anything that's outside of your values because you won't follow through on it, and that's when you fall out of integrity with yourself. If to be super simple, that's basically what it is. Now, where integrity can get confused is if you're a personal trainer and you've got a client who's, let's say they're I don't know, a mother, and their daughter's sick, and you've got an appointment with them at say 4 p.m., and they don't show up at 4 p.m., and you've got a super high value on personal training and your health and your fitness, and the daughter's sick, and they don't show up, and then they message you at 4:05, and you've probably been through experiences like this, right, where clients haven't shown up. And so it's 4:05 and they haven't shown up, and then all of a sudden you get this text message from the mother who says, oh, like I can't come because my daughter's unwell. And let's say you don't have family and sort of like that sort of you don't understand that. And so in your mind you're going, I can't believe that this person has not shown up to personal training. They've said they'd be here. Like, what a lack of integrity. And this person's going, I'm fully committed to my family. Like, I'm showing up with integrity. I'm following through on my promises to them. And so their perception of integrity is I'm living my integrity because of my family. This person's perception is that this person is not being integral because I haven't followed through on that commitment. But the highest level of integrity is that this person's following through on their family because family is the most important thing to them. But for this individual, they don't perceive that because their value system dictates that integrity is following through on your training. So we could all have different perceptions of integrity based on, sorry, we will all have different perceptions of what's integral internally, and we'll project that out onto others, right? So the meaning of like integrity is like we'll follow through, but the true meaning is really, well, you follow through on what's most important to you, and then to stay in integrity with others, you just don't promise things that are outside of your value system. And so it,
Go ahead,
yep.
sorry, go ahead.
I was going to say, so in business, you think about like your integrity in business has to do with your value system, right? So if you want to be integrity in business, you just do the things that are most aligned for you and you build a business around that.
And I think that's a really, really important point as well too, for business owners and leaders that are leading teams, is because, and I speak about this a lot if I'm doing corporate work, because business owners and business leaders, they create values and they have honesty and integrity and all those things in the walls, but then every human being lives by their own intrinsic values, and then that's where the conflict comes in, because why are you not doing X? How come you didn't show up for this? And they don't understand like that value application from that point of view. And I think it's such a real, if people really began to understand that, I think especially from a business point of view, and if you're creating or leading a team, to really understand your teams and Transit drivers is a game changer. It really, really is a game changer, because now you really understand what's actually really driving them. And then you can start to actually match performance to the things that they actually really truly value, so that you can get more momentum, more communication instead of conflict, which a lot of the times occurs because of that.
Yeah, 100%. 100%. I think every bit, like if you're in business, I think you need to know yourself first, which is your value system, obviously, because then you know what you're going to follow through on. You know what's going to work for you. You know what you're committed to, rather than the fantasy of what business should be. You can build a business related to who you are. And then knowing your teams. Like, if you don't know your team's value system, or at least, you know, and it's not even about like, just what do they do? It's like, if you just watch your team and what they move towards and what they're moving away from, you don't even have to understand all this psychology. You can just go, well, Steve over here, what does he spend most of his time doing? Well, if we watch him, he's actually, the thing that he loves the most is that he spends a lot of time communicating with clients. He spends a lot of time, let's say, I'm not sure, like communicating with clients, doing sales, but the dude's in admin. Like, we've got him in the wrong role. I'm getting pissed off at Steve because all my admin stuff's not done, but he's over here talking with everyone, communicating with clients, having conversations. In fact, he's making sales, which he's not even meant to be doing, and I've got him in admin. But I'm pissed off at him because the admin work's not doing. Like, so I'm going to sack Steve and get it. But it's like, no, dude.
Put him in sales.
Just put him in that role.
Yeah, 100%.
Like, he's showing you directly what's going to be most valuable to him. So I think even if you just watch your staff, you're going to get a better understanding of who they are, and they don't even have to know. It's just like, watch them.
I think even as a business owner as well too, and maybe you can relate, as a business owner, a lot of the times what happens, and I can't remember what podcast I listened to and they talked about this, but I've seen it for myself in my own life and in my own business, that you might get a specific role in a business, or maybe you've created the business yourself, and you've created the business from doing the thing that you actually really love, let's say coaching. And then as your business begins to grow, you bring on another coach and you bring on salespeople, and then all of a sudden you start to remove yourself from the thing that you actually really love and truly value. And then you feel lost because now you're managing people that are actually doing the thing that you really love, and now you're doing all the stuff that you don't. And that happens so often. And people then feel displaced within their own business.
Yeah, and I think that comes down to, again, it's like knowing yourself. And, you know, like, I don't believe that you have to know yourself when you first start a business, but you're going to start to get feedback when you're, you know, when things are out of alignment. And so it's like, well, I'm going to keep scaling, but I'm going to scale myself out of, like, I'm going to keep growing, but I'm going to grow myself out of the thing that I actually love. Like, it doesn't make sense. But I think there's also an element of control and fear that there's lack of awareness. So, you know, as Hormozy would call it, there's like an ignorance tax. It's like, well, I'm ignorant of who I am. And so I think that I should be building this business, and I want the title of being the fucking CEO or whatever. And it's all about status and all this other stuff, rather than going, well, no, I'm just going to do what I love. And so there's all that element. And I think there's like the fear and all that, which drives people to do that, and the ignorance of not knowing who they are, because it's like, well, what happens if I have someone else making the decisions in my business and things go wrong? You know, so it's like, well, if I'm hiring people who are meant to be in more important roles than me, does that make me any less valuable? And I think it comes back to what you were saying earlier about the insecurities. Because it's insecure, I've got someone else making all my business decisions, or I've got someone else running my finances, or there's someone else managing the money. I love coaching. This is where I provide the greatest amount of value. But here I am trying to do all these other things because I guess everything that I've learnt has dictated this is where I should be versus what's actually most important and where I'm going to get the most fulfillment out of my business. So
when did you, Justin, really get into this work then? Obviously, I'm presuming that you've had your business, the family business, running for a while. How did you come to meet Tanya, and how did you come to meet or get into this type of work, the mindset work, the DeMartini work, and all of that?
Yeah, okay. So this is a how far back do you want me to go? So, early 20s, So I'm 39 now. So I didn't get into this work early 20s. But early 20s was when, I guess, the journey started. So I was in a nightclub with some mates, and we had a little altercation with some guys earlier over one of my mates' girlfriends. And it was not, it was like nothing serious, just, you know, it's just some, you know, like young buck bullshit, right? But anyway, so midway through the night, I'm sitting on the couch next to her having a conversation, and the two guys, one of them comes up, pins me to the couch, and then the next one just is like pounding down on my face. So like, fuck, like my nose is still a little bit bent. I've had it all fixed and stuff, but it's still bent. Like I just knocked it back later, but like totally fucked me up, like totally fucked me up. And it like destroyed me, dude, because up until that point, and I didn't know at the time, but up until to that point, I had this belief system, like a lot around like your image and appearance. Like your image and appearance was like super important. Like it was like, that was the most important thing, beyond any of like anything else. Right. It was like how you looked, and it was all about girls and whatever. So, and so I was like, it put me into a hole. Like a pretty dark hole. And I remember coming back from, because I was away in another town at the time. And I remember coming back and I was sort of seeing this girl. And that was like the next weekend. Anyway, I came home and I just hid my face. I went to my fucking room because we had a bit of a party pad. And anyway, next weekend, the girl that I was kind of seeing at the time came over and, you know, like we were having sex basically. And I remember I just started breaking down crying in the middle of it. Right. And she says to me, she's like, what's wrong? I'm like, why do you even want to have sex with me? Like, look at me. And I just was like, so destroyed. And she said to me, she said like, but it's more than that. Like you're more than that. You're more than what you look like. And so that was like kind of the initiator for the journey of like going inward, because I'd been so outwardly focused, like, yeah, breath and body, but all of that, if you look at a lot of that, it's like, was also physical. It was like, what do I look like physically? Like training, breathing, performing. It's like putting on this outward show rather than what's going on inwardly. So it was all outward. And so that was the initiator for like,
those guys brought you back in the balance then?
Yeah, it was. Like it was the moment where I had to learn to love me and respect me for who I was, not how I looked. And then that sent me on a journey. That's when the journey started, right? So then I started to get into drugs because like, I just felt like I didn't know myself. I was like totally lost. I had no idea who I was. Got into drugs, got addicted to meth, got addicted to ice for quite a few years. And the whole time that was going on, like the whole time I was like addicted, there was this inner voice in me screaming like, you are better than this. You're greater than this. There's greatness in you. Like, what are you doing? Consistently, like I just remember it over and over and over that was going on. and so there was a lot of pain also that came up for me during that period that kind of like I hadn't really reflected on or looked on from my past that kept coming up through the addiction as well. So there was a lot of pain that sort of got brought to the forefront through that. And the addiction itself was like there's two parts to it. There's like, it was deeply, this is going to sound so weird to people, but it was deeply healing because it revealed to me so much about who I was in, like, and brought all these things inwardly up that I didn't even know or had been avoiding through that period. So it was deeply healing for me, but it was also obviously the opposite too. You know, like deep healing, I believe, comes with deep pain. You can't deeply heal unless there's deep pain there. And so the addiction was like the thing that then, and the use of drugs was the thing that every time I came down, everything would flood up. All the shit would flood up and it would just get bigger and bigger and bigger. And then that the same thought, like, you're greater than this. So it was deeply healing and deeply painful at the same time. I could probably do a 2 hours on 5 hours just on the addiction, but I won't. So then what happened was I met my wife. So like at that point, I was like at a point where I was like, no, like this needs to change. And my thinking at the time was, I need to swap an addiction for addiction. Like that was my thinking. It was like black and white. I was like, hey, what's more productive to my life than the thing that I'm doing that I can swap this out for? Right. And so the first thing I was like sex. So then I was like chasing heaps of girls for a period there at the end. And then that's when I met Sarah. And so when I met my wife, I remember seeing her in the coffee shop and she was at the coffee machine. So I just started working again. So, you know, like I went down the rabbit hole of dealing and all that stuff. And I guess that was kind of the business element that I had going on there as well. But I went back to the pizza shop that I mentioned earlier. And I said to him, I said, look, I'm just trying to get my fucking life together. Like, can I like come and work? Like I need some structure. Anyway, so I went back to work and the same week that I started back, my wife started there, Sarah. And I remember seeing her at the coffee machine. And I remember thinking to myself, I'm going to marry that girl. Anyway, it took me about 8 months to actually get her to go on a date with me. But that's a whole other story. So I met Sarah and then I was like going through my own sort of growth journey then. So like I knew about my mind. Oh, sorry. I need to add one bit, which will make it all clip together. So before sort of meeting Sarah and stuff, and the reason why I went and got the job was I was at home one night after I'd been out. It was about 3 o'clock in the morning and I promised myself I wouldn't go back to my mate's place. And I remember waking up in the morning. Well, I didn't really wake up. I didn't wake up, but I remember getting up in the morning because I kind of had, you know, like I wasn't even really asleep, but I felt like I was a passenger in my own body, right? So, you know, like I basically may as well have been sitting in the passenger seat of a car and someone else was driving it because I was in there and I was like screaming at myself, like, you're not going, you're not going, like, stop, you're not going. And I remember just getting up out of bed, walking out to the car, driving to his place, and I was like this battle in my head. But I had no control over my body, none whatsoever. It was like literally I was being remote controlled. And it was like, in that moment, I was like, how the fuck, like, how can this happen? How can I not control myself? That was the point when I got more into psychology rather than performance, right? So that was like kind of the initiator there, because I was like, fucking hell, like, how does this happen? Like, how can I not control me? Anyway, met Sarah. She helped me a lot because I didn't want to bring her into this life, right? So it was kind of like she was like my saving grace to some degree. I kind of like made her that. And then when it really initiated, so there was a lot of like personal growth journey. So I started training, going to the gym, and that was like sort of the thing that I was using to then focus a lot of this energy that I had, was just train. So training every day, that was kind of like the thing that helped me to move out and beyond. And the reality is it took me quite a few years. I'm not going to pretend it was overnight. Like I kind of think of it like, you know, it's like the progress was made. Like if it was every day that I was using, it was like, okay, the next week it was like, okay, it was like half a day that I didn't. And then like the next week it was like, okay, there's a day that you didn't. And so the way I measured my progress was, how long is it between and is it getting longer? So that's how I thought about it, rather than how most people think about addiction is it's going to be overnight. It's black or white. It's either on or off. Well, the reality is that I think there's modalities out there now that help, right, and can help you with that. But the reality is that back then I had no idea about that. And I was just, I realized that if I to think that I can just flick a switch, and also I think this also goes to other people as well, but to think that you can just flick a switch from a habit or a behavior that is so strong overnight to then not do it is part of the reason why so many fail in that space. Right. And it's also that expectation from all the people around them that they can just flick a switch overnight. It's like, dude, when was the last time that you even changed a pattern of behavior overnight? And it might be the fucking tiniest thing, like not looking at your phone in bed. You know, it's like, but you expect people with this pattern to just switch. Anyway, I digress. So when my son was born. And so when my son was born, Xavier, I just had this inspiration. I'm like, I need to set the example for him. And then I was like, I really am not all that I could be. And so then I started to dive down the path of like really diving in with coaches and learning. And I came across Di Martini in 2016. 2016, I came across John. I think I did the first breakthrough in 2017. Actually, I was working for him at the time, working with him at the time. So in another coaching business, so I was head of coaching and head of sales. And that's when I sort of dived into John's work. But I would say, Xavier was born in 2012.
Is that where you met Tanya as well too? And is that how you used it then?
I suppose
to bring it right forward then, now then, Justin, I suppose, for people that are listening, give people an example then of what you're really involved in right now between yourself and Tanya and Maximum Growth, and what you do and how you actually impact and help people.
Yeah, so, I met Tan, so I'll just finish on that. So I met Tan in 2020 during COVID. So I think when everything sort of shifted online, and I was going through like a really hectic, severe sort of burnout cycle in the business that I was in, which was the one where I was head of sales and coaching, just because it wasn't really aligned for me. And so anyway, I met Tan then and started doing some of her group coaching stuff then, and then went into the business side of things with her as well. And then fast forward, I went out, I just started, like, I left the business I was in and just started doing one-to-one coaching by myself in 2020. And just was like, cool, my whole nervous system just needed to be, I just needed, you know, the money, all that stuff. I was like, no, you're about to, like, if you don't back off, you're like, shit's going to go south fast. So then I moved into one-to-one. And anyway, later that year, sorry, what are we in now, 2024? Yeah, so it was the end of 2022, sorry. End of 2022, this other business, we just literally come into it. So this family business that we've got now, we just come into. I was in like the first month of that, and then I get a phone call from T. And she's like, she'd been messaging me beforehand. I thought she wanted to like have a conversation with me to come back up into the business coaching that we do, or the business mindset stuff. And I get on the phone with her, and I'm expecting that conversation, but the conversation I get, so I was a bit shocked. The conversation I get is that she's like asking me to join MG as a business partner. And so like my head's disconjointed because I'm expecting a sales call, but I'm getting basically a sales call, but to, you know, like buy into MG. Mm. And so then we had a conversation over a month of sort of December, January 22, 23. And then I officially came on in Feb last year. And it's been a really cool journey. So,
What do you love about doing what you're doing right now then, Justin, in combination with Tanya and the group?
Yeah, so the thing that I love most is, and I think I've sort of touched on a bit through this podcast, is really like helping like coaches and business owners get their service to the world and expand their getting their service to the world. So whether that's, you know, like they're kind of at startup, or whether that's like, you know, like I was talking about that label before, where they're kind of at Spotfire, helping them break through whatever is stopping them from impacting more people, and also then building a life that they love. Because I also don't want to see, and I guess this drive kind of comes from the void, or my perceptions of my dad and my mom. I'm not saying this is true for them, but my perceptions of what it was that their life was really occupied by the business. And so part of my drive too is helping people build their business around who they are as an individual, so it's an extension of them, but also so it doesn't just occupy 24/7 of their life. Because the reality is that how many of us are ever going to get to the end and go, oh, well, I wish I had 36 hours in a day so I could have spent all that in my business. Most of us aren't. Like, most people aren't. But there's very few people who probably do, you know, if they've got a super high value. I'm sure Elon Musk would be someone who would be like, well, I wish, you know, I had more time in a day, right? But he's like, you know, his value system is very narrow.
Helping people. Don't get so busy building your business for your family that you forget your family.
Yeah. Yeah.
And that's what a lot of people do.
That's it. Like, that's the thing that I love, is like helping people to get aligned And then whether that means that they have to, some people have to change, like have to just get out of the business they're in, which is a big move. Like it's not, you know, you spend all this time and then you realize you've literally built the foundations and a skyscraper of a thing that you hate. And then it's like, okay, well now how do I get out of that? Now that's not my thing. Like I don't help people exit or any of those things, but it's like that realization itself is, is transformative, but comes with a huge amount of challenge for people to be actually be able to make that jump. You know, it's like the sunk cost fallacy. It's like, well, I put all this energy in. Now you want me to get out? Well, no, I don't want you to get out, but your health and your mindset and the destruction around you is dictating that either you get out or things are going to destroy themselves. So that's what I love. And I think one of the what's even deeper beyond that too is I think is that it's like helping like coaches. So if I get real narrow, it's like helping coaches get their service to the world. You know, that's what I love. And so that's the mindset. That's some of the tactical that helps them to do that is the thing that really lights me up. If I get a message from, you know, like I think about if I get a message from someone who's fresh and who's never done a sale, and it's like, oh my God, I just converted my first high ticket. It's like, fuck yeah. Like, dude, that shit lights me up. Like, it makes me teary. It's like, here's someone who was here, had all these ideas about sales, had all these, you know, ideas that they just couldn't do it, was too afraid to even just invite someone to take a look at their offer. And now all of a sudden they're like, man, I just did $2,500. I just did $2,500 sale. And it's like, dude, I'm like, oh my God, it's not just in the mindset work. It's like when they do that, that's like a huge paradigm shift for them. They're like, oh my God, I used to earn $2,500 a month. I just made $2,500 in a day. What the fuck else is possible?
Yeah.
Dude, I'm nearly getting teary talking about it. And so
it's a big standard shift, isn't it? It's just it's that whole identity shift again. Big time.
Yeah. Because it's like, that's a paradigm they were never in.
100%.
So I'll share just a quick one. And this is like personal because it's to do with my wife. But we had so we bought the donut van business back in. So we didn't start this one. We bought this already running. So and then we've scaled it so far. But we had a coffee shop as well, when was it? So it was last year. So we had a coffee shop, but I remember my wife coming to me in like January or it was either January or February after our first couple of months. And she sits down to me and she goes, we earned more money in a week than what our coffee shop makes in a year. And it blew her fucking mind because she didn't, it was so far out of her awareness that was possible for her. That it like blew her mind, paradigm shifter. And so it's like her thinking just from that experience, no mindset work, nothing, just the experience of that, poof, like her world just expanded. It's like, what the hell else is possible? We ended up selling the coffee shop, closing the coffee shop down because the time for reward just wasn't worth it. We just shut the doors on it because the time for reward. But you know, so it's like those little things like that. That's what I love. It's like the huge paradigm shift that either comes through doing the mindset work, but also how life then reflects that back, and they go, "Oh my God, I didn't even like what is this?"
Yeah, it's just, you know, like, it's like realizing that there's so much more there, realizing that there's so much more potential, that there's so much more opportunity. I think that you just didn't realize because, as you said, you're kind of stuck in that pattern of a belief system that this is what you can do and this is what you need to do, and it's incremental changes. But then if someone else comes along, just boom, blast out of the water. Well, why do I need incremental changes when I can go and go after this and it gives me so much more, probably for less effort, less time, less worry, less stress, let's say. Not always, but a lot of times it can be that for sure.
Yeah, I think that's where the real reward is, like for when people get the feedback. You know, like we sit down and you sit down with people and people can get a huge, like say for example, if you're working on some huge pain that they've had from their past, and then all of a sudden like they get this breakthrough and it's like, oh my God, like it's like this flow and effect, their entire paradigm changes in their life, right? And then they go out into the world and then the way they see the world completely changes and then their whole life transforms in front of them. And it's like this beautiful like effect. And then you hear about the feedback like they share with you like the feedback that they're getting from the world about the paradigm shift that they had in here. And like until they have that paradigm shift, they usually don't even realize that their world is really creating, their mind is really creating what's out here.
Yeah.
But then there's also those paradigm shifts where it's like they don't even know that they've had some sort of mental shift. And then they get this feedback out here, and that's the thing that exposes, like, poof, blows their head wide open. They're like, oh, my God. Like, I didn't even know this was possible for me. I read all the books. I've heard all the people talk about it. But for me, it just wasn't a it was not in my reality.
Yeah, 100%.
And so I think those paradigm shifts are cool. So that's, I guess that's what I love helping people with, is, like, the mindset, but then also, like, you know, what's the feedback they're getting from their world through putting in the tactical stuff and making those decisions that are most likely uncomfortable and have an element of risk associated to them. But then when they, you know, get the feedback that it's on path and it blows their mind, that's cool, man. That's cool.
100%. And I can resonate with that totally, man. And then, Justin, I'll ask you a question that I ask everybody. So the podcast is called Conversations That Matter. If you were to have a conversation with yourself at any time in your life, maybe when you were a kid or maybe when you're going through some of your toughest times, what conversation would you have with yourself? What would you tell yourself?
It's that there's beauty in everything, that you just need to know the questions to be able to discover it. Because I think, and like it might seem a bit cryptic, but I'm also one who likes to figure things out. So I probably would be cryptic with myself because that's just how I operate. But I believe if you have that mindset if you perceive it's a wrong, there's also right in it. If you perceive it's a bad thing, there's also the good in it. And if you utilize that, then you've got a whole heap of fuel in your life in order to get you to where you want to go.
Fantastic, man.
So don't like, yeah.
Yeah, fantastic. Love it. Justin, for people that are looking to find out a wee bit more about what you do, yourself and Sanya, where's the best place to find you?
So Maximum Growth on www.maximumgrowth.co, which is obviously on the interwebs. And then we also have a free Facebook group called Students of Wisdom for coaches, facilitators, and growth-driven people. So they're probably the two best places to find us. And then me personally, I also have an Instagram, which is just Justin Wiseman Coach, at Justin Wiseman Coach.
Justin, thank you very much for hopping on the podcast. I really, really enjoyed that conversation, man. Thank you very much, bud.
Thanks, man. Thank you for having me on.
Fantastic.
Cool.